The Montreal Canadiens recently hired Hall of Famer Martin St-Louis to replace the fired Dominique Ducharme as its coach. At his first press conference, St-Louis talked about addressing concepts of play rather than systems. Here's what he said. A concept is more playing with a little more instinct, with ideas of how we want to be as a team. Now, there is structure inside concepts. In systems, you box players in to only certain things they can do. That was probably one of the things that I hated the most as a player, is playing in a system. I'm Richard Berkeson, and this is Grassroots, the Minor Hockey Show podcast. Way back in episode 38, I invited my friend and current guest host, Dean Holden, onto the show to discuss systems versus principles of play. In this episode, we're going to revisit some of those thoughts with St. Louis' remarks as the backdrop. Concepts. What a concept. Dean, welcome back.
Thanks, Richard.
So was novice NHL coach St. Louis correct?
I liked what he said. He alluded to his own personal experience. He was a very good offensive player, very creative, gifted, artistic. I think those attributes that he possessed, he would feel confined to play within a system, constrained within a box. It's like, you know, telling Picasso he only has red, blue, green to paint with. It's and not just St. Louis. I think that players of his ilk, you know, you look at any of the greats, how many of them actually truly played within a system? I mean, look at the Edmonton Oilers right now with perhaps one of the generational talents with Connor McDavid. Offense can score a ton. Defensively, they're struggling and there's personnel issues there. But a lot of the talk has been around potentially the lack of getting them to buy into some sort of a defensive system or structure. And they're more concerned about offense. If I was a coach, and I'm not, I'd love to see the amount of offense those guys are generating there. And do you take away that strength of a player such as McDavid to gain a little bit on the defensive side? And maybe you can a little bit, but by and large, you should go with the strengths that those players have and try and maximize your concepts around them.
The impact on minor hockey to read that statement or listen to him talk when he spoke about it recently, I think is profound. You and I did discuss this back in episode 38. We were talking about principles. And I know that when you look at, for instance, the four principles of offensive play and defensive play, as espoused by Hockey Canada in the Dev 1 and high performance programs, you know, pressure, support, transition, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Puck control as being one of the principles of offensive play. Those principles are really important. But conceptually, for a minor hockey coach, what we're talking about is really, for instance, the idea offensively of two kids outnumbering one. That's a concept. That's not a principle. It's not a system. We're not talking about two-on-ones. We're talking about, in order to achieve some measure of offensive success and gain scoring chances, you have to outnumber the opposition. And it really boils down to a two against one. You see where I'm going?
Yeah, I think if you do tie it into those principles, you can look at the next one after puck control, which is support. So right. If you can generate more active opportunities, more people that are can become part of the play, and we've talked about Igor's work on the show prior with the 45% of the time is one-on-one, 35% of the time two-on-one, two-on-two, 10% one-on-two. I mean, you start to see that the game itself is not a game of five-on-five. It's in the closest area to the puck, or you know, you could find a stretch person if there's a big opening and a passing lane all of a sudden opens up, then that person now becomes part of that equation. But by and large, you're dealing with things happening in a small space. And because of that, time is also a little bit compressed. You know, if you're dealing with instant pressure in a corner or along a wall, you just don't have the time and space to make those decisions. So it behooves you, if you have the puck on offense, your teammates need to recognize that and try to get open to become support options, become part of that one-on-two, two-on-one equation. Like, try to get in and change the numbers to your favor.
You know, we talk a lot about offensive play, as I just said, two against one. We don't talk a whole lot about defensive concepts. So one concept that I've always espoused and pushed on coaches really is the idea of getting your players when they don't have the puck and are not near the play to be net side inside, which I really stole from soccer unabashedly, which means staying between the attacking player and the net and taking an inside position to that player. If you can get your kids to play net side inside, even in your own zone, only in your own zone, then that's a concept. It may not be a system. I mean, you could build all kinds of things around that, but if you are net side inside, you are effectively forcing the play around the perimeter of your own zone and forcing them to go through you to get to the net. That's a concept. That's the kind of thing that I think St. Louis was referring to.
Yeah, I think it's similarly, you could say, you know, protect the house, defend the house, collapse to the middle. You
Yes.
know, when you're looking at your defensive side of the ice and the defensive half, you want to push everything from the inside to the outside. And conversely, as you cross center ice, you're now trying to penetrate that inner area because that's going to be your prime scoring location. So I agree with that. I think it's we're discussing concepts here, and I think that they do definitely, especially at minor hockey, I think it becomes easier for the coach actually to start to think about the game conceptually and then to teach using concepts rather than systems.
Another concept that I've tried to get across to certainly the players I've coached over the years is showing them how to influence a play. So I'm going to take an example of a forechecker who comes down the middle of the rink, and there are two different players on, like two defensemen, let's say, who are going D to D. And you allow the first pass from right D to left D, and you start to steer that left D towards the boards to make the pass that he didn't want to make. In other words, he's got less of an angle, he's got maybe less time, less space. Learning how to influence the play is a concept. Whether you're forechecking with one or two or three, it's a concept. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I get it. I'm running my through in my head like an actual definition and of how that applies to a concept. Like, I'm thinking it could be a form of pattern recognition. It could be looking for environmental cues to you know, lead to that pattern recognition, i.e., looking at where they are in time and space, what hand are they? If I force a pass from this direction, is it going to put him onto his backhand or onto his forehand? Is it going to put them into a position of difficulty and duress, or is it going to make it easier? So, do I need to adjust my angle? Do I need to adjust my timing, my spacing? You know, I think there's a lot of stuff behind what you just said that a lot of
Yeah.
people probably won't think about. You know, and I think that that's this what separates the great players like Marty St. Louis. And I mean, he even talked about it in his introduction there, that he hated being boxed into playing a system into black and white. It's if you do this, then you must do that, as
Right.
decreed by the grand dictator wearing the suit and tie behind the bench. And oftentimes these players are smarter than the coaches, and they see stuff because they're actively on the ice. They see it from their first person point of view. And especially an artist like San Luis, he might actually know better than the coach what to do in that instance because he's got more recent experience in those situations and a book on these players and their tendencies, and he might actually have a better solution than the black and white. And it just handcuffs a player like that because he knows he's going to get into crap if he tries something different, especially if it doesn't work.
Well, here's a way for coaches, minor hockey coaches, to put it to the test without actually doing it with their teams. If they're still playing beer league hockey, which most coaches are in some way, shape, or form, try to go on the ice, or not try, go on the ice, and let's say you're a forward, and see if you can influence the play or steer, or you call it pattern recognition, force it, see if you can get defensemen to do what you prefer them to do. In other words, bang the puck up the boards to some winger who's not even looking. Now, I'm no great shakes as a player, and I'm doing that in my beer league where I play here in Whitby. And I'm a very ordinary hockey player. But it is amazing to me how often I'm saying to myself, can I get this defenseman? I'm just experimenting. Can I get this defenseman to put the puck where I prefer he put it? And invariably it works, because you come at a certain angle, not even close to them, and what will they do? They will take the path of least resistance. All kids, all players will do that. It doesn't matter whether they're 50 years old or 10 years old. They will do that. So you can teach kids the idea behind doing something without having an actual system in place. The problem is, how do you teach it? How do you present that package?
I remember back to my George Kingston days, and he used the words influencing as part of his defensive concepts presentation.
Right, right.
And he talked about how you can steer and influence and angle players into an area that perhaps that you want them to go, and they might not want to go. And as you said, I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, there's a human nature tends to be the laziest, and if you're dealing in beer league or minor hockey and it's very unskilled, of course they can't make that, you know, okay, I'm going to go to where I don't want to go, and then all of a sudden zing off an amazing pass and thread it through, you know, three sets of skates and two sticks. It just doesn't happen, right? So how you go about teaching that, I think, is, you know, I think it has to start with recognition on behalf of the coach. You know, what is a concept, and what are the concepts that are pertinent to my age level? And once you have a bit of a skeleton outline and an understanding, then you can go about trying to figure out, how am I going to actually teach these things? One way that you might go about this is to capture some YouTube clips. Look for recent highlights of things that you find are useful, if it's defensive concepts or offensive concepts, and then identify the concepts and show them to your players.
When I watch NHL games now, there are certain things that jump out at me, such as line changes, particularly during the long change in the second period. And I'm watching how the players, who are the smart players, who are able, which players are able to, you know, the other team is coming out of their zone. You're on a long change. You know your line has to be off. And you're going in there and trying to kind of stall them so the players behind you can get off the ice. How are you influencing the play to allow them to make two more passes to give you time to go to the bench and the player behind you step up? Like, that's where the really intelligent hockey players that you, I don't know if you can even teach that, but instinctively they know it. And I think in the case of Marty St. Louis, when he was a player, was offensively brilliant. I mean, I coached against him in junior A in the Ottawa area. We were with my friend Rick Lautaser, and I were with and Rick Greg Kennedy, too. You've met those guys. We were with Nepean, and Marty was with Hawkesbury. He scored 87 points in 31 games, and he was the third leading scorer on his team. And every time we played them, you just knew that they were flying. They could read the play like there was no tomorrow. It was unbelievable. So, you know, that was instinct for him. I don't think anybody taught him that. So trying to present that case to pro players should be interesting.
Anticipation, I think, is a good descriptor of what you're talking about, because it's in the example you stated on a line change. How do I'm going to stay out while my teammates change. How do I slow down or deflect a potential attack, like a stretch pass to catch us on our line change? So how do I position myself to prevent that, to force it a pass from left to right or right to left, or some sort of a delaying mechanism to keep them in their zone to allow us time to come out and set up
Right.
our defensive structure. And I think that you said you don't know if it can be taught. I think it can be taught, and I think how it can be taught is by observing, like players observing video examples. I think it can be taught by asking questions to draw their attention to certain environmental cues, help
What do you mean?
educate the
Wait a
player.
second. Hold on, Dean. What do you mean by environmental cues? Can you expand on that, please?
Well, I think number one, you need to recognize what's happening in the game. So there has to be some self-awareness. So an environmental cue is, what are my teammates doing right now? What is the other team doing right now? How do I know what's going on? I have to have my head up. I have to be able to turn, look, head on a swivel, shoulder check, whatever. I know I'm at the end of a shift. My guys are changing. Do we all go off and just dump and hope for the best? Like, and I hate that because I'm a possession guy. I absolutely hate that. I detest it. That's last thing on earth I want you to do unless there's no other option. I would
Right.
much rather see this, and my U15 team does this, I think, because we talk about the concepts and the cues around playing the old playground game, keep away. And so keep away, let's just expand that concept to this line change example. So if you've got five guys and my front guy has the puck and he's going down to rush and it's toward the end of a shift and his two wingers, he's a centerman, they peel off and maybe the 2D go or not, whatever. He needs to have his head up to know what's going on. Where am I in time and space? Do I have support? Oh crap, I don't. My partners are going on a line change. What am I going to do? An unskilled player and a coach that's not knowledgeable, to match the not knowledgeable parents in the stands, dump it in, right? So they'll flip it off and then they'll skate over to the bench and coast. Well, they'll coast over to the bench because now you're going to get an illegal line change and maybe too many men, and give away time and space. But you need to take the concept of keep away, and I'm actually astounded at how well my U15 guys will do this, even on a penalty kill, shorthanded, 4-on-5, on the rush, as we're changing our three other guys. They won't just give up the possession and the time and space. They will actually carry it into open ice and rag the puck a little bit, but still heading toward the offensive end. And they will try to find a way to skate with the puck and get it deeper and deeper and deeper. And if that draws some of their players to them, okay, great. But they try to play keep away 1-on-5 as long as they can, as deep as they can. And then they know that by the time that happens, oftentimes we've got our other forward on the ice now, actually in the play near the puck carrier. One of our D is jumping up. So now we've actually got three guys near and on the puck and one guy back. And we score a ton of shorthanded goals. I think we're probably one of the top teams in our league. I haven't looked at the stats, I'm told this. But we generate multiple scoring chances and pressure on our shorthanded play because our players take this concept of it's keep away. I can just go and carry it, and then I can start to freeze it along the wall, play with it on the wall, buy time. So these are all the environmental cues regarding time and space, situational awareness, that I think are easily taught. And you can teach them off ice, Richard. Play handball, parking lot, and play
Great
freaking
game.
keep away with handball, like a
Right.
football, a frisbee, a golf ball, a tennis ball. Maybe you add a bounce, so you can't just pass hand to hand. It's got to be
Right.
one bounce, so it goes into space before you can catch it. I mean, get out of the box, and I think that's what Martin St-Louis is referring to. Like he hated to be constrained in this box. Here's a way to learn concepts outside of the box so we can play outside the box.
How did you present that scenario to your U15 group?
Primarily verbally, but through questioning, asking them, presenting. I didn't tell them about the name of the game called Keep Away. I said, think back to, because you're in school, you're in phys ed. What kind of games do you play out on the, out in the field at recess? And
Right.
so I walked them through it again, Socratic question, walked it through. You take the time, you get them engaged, you get them to think about it, and then you start to, I put them into small groups and have them think about, in the game of keep away, how do we possess the ball the best? What characteristics, what strategies, what ideas and concepts do we need to do to win a game of keep away? If coach is out there, I can judge it two ways. One, how many passes do we make in a row, like sequences? How many overall passes do we make? How much time do we have in possession? Then defensively, the other group, what are some concepts that we need to consider to regain possession of the ball? And it goes back again, episode 38, we talked about three situations in hockey. Nobody has the puck, so you need to read who's gonna be on offense and who's gonna be on defense. That's anticipation and transition, right? And that's a read. If you're closer to the puck, but you don't have the puck and you're my opponent, I need to anticipate now that you're probably gonna be on offense. So therefore, I need to influence accordingly. And that's called anticipation. That's reading an environmental cue. So it's a 0-1-2 scenario. Nobody has the puck. Team A has the puck. Team B has the puck. You're on offense, you're on defense, or neither. You're in that transition Netherland, and you've got to anticipate who's going to get there first and what are we going to do once somebody gets possession.
With the possible exception of soccer, and they're not wearing skates, the foot skill obviously is incredible at the upper levels. That's what makes hockey, the fluidity of the game, so exciting and yet so challenging, because they have to read all these cues, learn to deal with them, learn to adapt, learn to change on a blink. Within a half a second, the puck can be on three different sticks. And you've got to be able to react to them using the skills, the skating skills, puck handling skills, visual skills, etc. That's what makes it such a fun sport, is because it changes so much. Dozens upon dozens of turnovers in a period.
Hundreds, hundreds.
Hundreds, right? So, for the average minor hockey coach listening to this, or even the above average hockey coach listening to this, and hopefully
And
that.
thanks to both of those listeners, by the way.
Ouch, that really hurt.
Well, it shouldn't hurt you, Richard. We're trying to
No,
elevate everybody up to become better than average.
right. I'm trying to elevate the conversation, of course. That coaches listening to this are going, well, okay, that's really good. What concepts should I be prioritizing? Which ones for the age group? I'm coaching 10-year-olds, I'm coaching 14-year-olds, I'm coaching house league, I'm coaching tier 3 competitive. How do I determine what concepts are the most important ones, and how do I present them? So where do they go to find that?
Well, I
I have an
think that,
idea, but
yeah, and I mean, I do too, and I think that I almost wonder if by telling them our ideas, if we're actually becoming a greater part of the problem, because I think that too much of minor hockey coaching and coaching in general is too much frickin' spoon feeding, and we get spoon fed information and crap, sometimes the two are synonymous, from so many sources, we don't think about them ourselves, we don't figure it out ourselves, we just take it for what it is and go try and apply it. I think from the question you just asked, A, I think the coach needs to know what's the age level of my team, what's the overall capabilities of my team, where does my team fit, like what's their strengths and weaknesses, what techniques are acceptable, what needs to be shored up. I think once you have your overall coaching philosophy and clearly understand your values, you might be aware that now I'm biased toward offense or I'm biased toward defense, whatever. Know yourself, know your team, figure out what's appropriate for your team. My overall answer to that would be go find it yourself. Go find a list of concepts on offense and a list of concepts on defense yourself. Don't limit yourself to the sport of ice hockey. You're playing a team invasion game. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, know what I mean. Get outside the box, start to look for commonalities in different sports that are also invasion games on offense and defense. Write out your entire master list of on both sides of that equation, knowing yourself, knowing your team, knowing your age, knowing where your kids are at right now. You make the decision because you're the best judge. Not me, not you, not Hockey Canada, not Hockey USA. You do the work.
This is where the coaches have to have a handle on understanding that whatever they do at the course during the course of a season, many of those concepts will not truly come to fruition for another 2, 3, 4 years, or even longer than that. That's the way the brain, a child's brain works. It's like a blob of clay that we have to mold and fix and improve on. And as they get older, they build up those tools and that confidence. And it's very much like in school, where a kid struggles with math at the beginning, and then all of a sudden in grade four goes, oh, this isn't so bad after all. And they get stronger and stronger until they can solve quadratic equations in grade 10 and all that other stuff, you know. But we have to have our coaches understand that if you are a defensive-minded coach, the idea of net side inside may have certain limitations, but if they can grasp just the basic idea in year one, by year three, if you stay with them, that they will have a real good handle on it.
I think that's right. I think that like the neuroplasticity that you talked about and the age appropriateness, and at what age do kids start to be able to process a better understanding around concepts? Because I could tell a concept, I could have a video clip, I could have them go through it in the playground using handball games, I could tell them the frickin' answer, and then when I put them into a game on the ice, they still won't do it. And I'm
right.
Going, what's wrong? Well, nothing wrong with you, there's nothing wrong with the kid, there's nothing wrong with that technique. There's a lack of understanding of the preparedness of the child. Are they able to learn that concept at this point? You know, and you might see some herky-jerky attempts to please you, because that child will then revert back to the concept that Martin St. Louis talked about. Like, he'll revert back to a black and white inside the box if-then statement, trying to please the coach, because younger kids really want to please the adult, the parent, the coach, right? And they'll do it without understanding the why. And we talked about in episode 38, the what is the actual concept. The how is how it's going to get done, and the why is that deeper understanding that in this example, the child just doesn't have and is not capable of having, so coaches and parents don't get frustrated. It's like taking that NHL play. Actually, I just saw somebody talked about Calgary was playing somebody a couple weeks ago, and I think it was Shillington had a penalty, and he came out of the box toward the end of the third period, and he jumped into the rush, and I just saw it yesterday. I counted, I think it was 6 passes in a row. Like, the entire play happened within about 2.5 seconds on a, I think it was a 3-on-1 rush or something.
I saw that play.
And
yes.
Like, yeah. Tic-tac-toe score.
Yeah.
And I'm going, I can't even believe they completed that number of passes, that speed, under pressure,
right,
in that small space, in that short period of time. So coaches, you can't replicate that. Like, I mean, like you can't tell me the Flames practiced that at all. That was individual, out of the box creativity and technique and ability, based on their level of play. It was a unique solution to the problem that presented itself, that these guys were capable of at speed, under pressure, on demand, and they executed.
Yes.
A U10, a U8, a U15. I don't care if you're AAA, U18. Likely cannot do the same thing. So we need to remember what we see in the pros and junior and these, the video models that we might choose to show our kids to try to, you know, implement some sort of conceptual knowledge transfer. Don't expect the perfect model that we're showing them then to the actual attempts at the model to look anything near that.
Well, as you said, you know, that was an enormous number of passes to make in a short period of time. And it certainly relied on a very high level of skill and technique, but it also relied on a great deal of conceptual knowledge of the situation, you know, the pattern recognition that you referred to, the environmental cues, how many defenders there were, where was the goalie, if I pass it to the left, all this happening in a blink. If I pass it to the left, he will pass it to the right, he'll pass it back to me. Like, that takes years of experience to understand how to apply the God-given skills I've got to be able to make that play and make it work. I'm going to just slide over to another example.
Sure.
I think I talked to you earlier about a junior girls game I saw on the, just recently. So these girls are, you know, 16, 17 years old for the most part. A great many of them will go on to play, you know, college hockey somewhere. They're pretty darn good, very fast, offensively challenged a little bit because they don't have the strength and experience and skill development that the boys have had. Largely, not mostly, but largely. And I was tracking another stat for the coach, but I was also kind of mentally tracking the number of passes on our team's breakout that went to a winger on the hash mark. I think I got to about six in the entire game, in a 45-minute game. Six or seven where a defenseman was passing to a forward on the hash mark and then exited the zone. Now, here's what happened. In many cases, the pass to the winger on the hash mark ended up being, because the girl was more or less standing still or moving very slowly or in the middle of a transition skate, the puck was intercepted after she got it, or she tried to chip it out or throw it up the middle of the rink type of thing. There was no second pass. There was no pass back to the D, D to D behind the net, go up the other way. It was pass to the wing. So if it only happens six, eight, let's say even 10 times in a game, why is it our 7 and 8 year olds are practicing passing to a winger, pass it to a center, pass it to the other winger? Like, that's, that to me is a concept that has gone awry. You get out of your zone.
Insanity.
Yeah. You get out of your zone by controlling the puck and getting it to whoever is open, or carry it out, or do whatever you need to do to get it out of your zone successfully.
Why are we destroying our children by teaching patterns?
That's it.
Martin Saint-Louis, like, he hated it.
Yeah.
Like, it's, I mean, you don't have to be an artistic scoring pro at the NHL level. Like we're killing our kids, Richard. Like present a problem and ask them what the solutions are. And I even did it at Timbits, you know, I, going back to an earlier conversation, how do you teach concepts like U8, whatever. I started teaching concepts knowing, like you said, that maybe in 2, 3, 4 years, you might start to see some of the stuff really take off. Like, the lights might go on because the neuroplasticity is kicking in. But you need to start to present them with these rich learning environments where they have these cues available. You can help draw their attention to these cues. They might see them and can't do anything about it. They might know they're there, but they just can't do it. They might not even know they're there, but they're aware of them in the back of their mind. And over time, it gets prepared. And like you said, you know, if it happens 6, 8, 10 times, I mean, again, go back to Igor's work. Like, you know, what are we doing here? And, you know, the coach needs to ask themselves, why am I doing this in practice? What relation does this activity that I'm doing in practice have on the game? And you had mentioned about your stat taking there prior to just starting about turnovers, and for 3 periods you track turnovers. And I had this conversation with a couple other coaches in different conversations in the last week. We just finished a tournament in small town Alberta, and why are you keeping track of any statistic? You know, A, what is the statistic? Why are you keeping track of it? And how are you going to use that statistic? Like, do any of these people use the statistics, like, during the game? When you hand them a sheet between periods, do they look at it? And then in their blizzard of information between periods or at the pregame, is there any reference to turnovers and Why study some of the stuff? It was a big joke in minor hockey in our day. You give the busybody parents a bunch of statistics to do during the game to keep them out of your hair, and you thank them, you look at the statistic, you throw it in the garbage. It's busy work. And I would suggest that there's some intention behind why coaches want statistics, but what's the actual utility? And once you know the utility, what are the odds of it happening in a game? 6, 10 times you get a pass from behind the net to somebody standing stationary on the hash mark. Is there not better ways to break out? Can we not let our kids problem solve the other 95% of the time there?
So I would go even a step further and ask the question using the Socratic method, of course, because that's what you espouse. I would ask the question, what is the concept that you really feel strongly about for your team? And how can you make it work in practice? And then what are you going to do about it in a game to track whether or not it's successful? And it's somewhat judgmental, of course. There's a certain level of subjectivity about, in the other team's zone, how often do your forwards influence the play successfully versus unsuccessfully? If you're talking about offensive play and your team is offensively challenged or their skill level is poor, are you tracking shots on net or are you tracking scoring chances? Are you tracking scoring chances from a certain space, because you want to get your kids to understand that you don't have to shoot from the mid lane. You can shoot from any lane. You can even shoot from behind the goal line. You can wrap around. How many times are your kids actually trying to do what you've practiced? If there's no practice to game connection, it's a waste of time.
Huge, huge. And oh boy, I'm trying to remember the name of the Czech guy who runs the Federation now. I'm drawing a blank. I can see him. Nice mustache. Anyway, he, back in the late 80s and early 90s, when I started Hockey Canada, we had Erkka Westerlund came over on a coaching exchange, and he was focused on the importance of transition, which is a big part of what we've talked about today, that anticipation and transition. Starting to develop some game sense and reading environmental cues. And yeah, it's a little blue book from Hockey Canada. Yep, exactly. There it is. Transition from game to practice, I believe, is what it was called. And
Outstanding book. Outstanding.
Slava Lehner was the Czech gentleman. I was just forgetting his name. It was a green book. So Slava produced that a year later. Exactly. It's a beautiful green book, and it's both books were very much, and I highly recommend them. If they're still available, I
Try to
don't know if
find
I
them.
have copies, but they're tough to find, maybe Hockey Canada. But they're very good because they're very applicable. Like at that time and era, they were more applicable than anything else I saw. But they talk about, if you look at them, it's the interrelationship from practice to game to practice to game to practice to game. It's that ongoing action research. Cause and effect and tweak, cause and effect, tweak relationship that every coach should be viewing the entire season in, not just a series of discrete games and discrete practices with very little or no interconnectivity.
Right. And they don't focus on system play and whether or not you're using two forecheckers or breaking out a certain way. They're talking about using, and by the way, you can't find them on the Hockey Canada site. They don't sell those things anymore, only Hockey Canada materials. So they focus on what, they don't use the word concepts, but what are your ideas? How do you explore those ideas? How do you, water those ideas and get them to grow into something a little bit more fruitful and useful, no matter what level you're coaching?
And I'd have to look at them again just to refresh my memory, because I'd probably have, given now I've got like another 30 some years of experience, I might have some additional criticisms or pats on the back to hand out based on what they are now. But maybe, Richard, what we do is, if you take a picture of each one of those, of the cover, and include it in your show notes with the title or whatever visible, so people, if they want to search these out on their own, they can.
Both of those fellows were part of the Hockey Canada guest coach program in Calgary that I was part of in they were there a year or two after me. They didn't ask me to write a book, but I did anyway. Years
well, you
later.
Did, but it just wasn't on transition. It was on
coaching, just
cancer.
Coaching. Yeah,
and coaching.
Okay, that's so applicable to minor hockey. But
pain in the nether regions.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, don't go there, please, please. So those kinds of materials provide coaches, and I've actually photocopied those things, probably illegally. I think I violated copyright. And I sent the photocopies to our high-performance coaches in Whitby. And I don't know if guys have used them, but there's a lot of information there about one-on-one, one-on-two, such as the research that we talked about from Igor's presentation a couple of shows ago. The minor hockey coaches are fed, as you say, a lot of stuff from Hockey Canada and manuals and clinics, but there's not much there that mines the mine of their brains. You know, let's do a little bit of a dive into what is your approach. You know, I can watch our coaches here in this organization. I have a pretty good handle on their approach, and often they don't know how to make it work, so they resort to drills or to, you know, pattern sequences, because we want to get their skill level up. And I understand the need to get their skill level up to make certain things work. But at some point, you have to put the kids into a situation where they have to try it. They have to apply it. Small area games being, you know, as you have so often mentioned, the best way to teach the game is to play the game.
Yeah, and you use the game purposely to draw out whatever concept or area or consideration that you want to get and apply your constraints. So, I think that, I mean, yes, like skills and technique are highly, highly important. I mean, a lot of people accuse me and some of the people that I hang out with, because we think a lot of the same in the same ways that we put this importance on the small area
right.
games.
Right.
A lot of people accuse all of us of, being anti-skill people or anti-technique
no.
people, and it's no, we're not. But it's like, why do I want to take time out of a team practice on a valuable ice time sheet at X number of $100 an hour that I only get maybe two a week? Maybe three. It depends on your situation, right? But why am I going to, in my opinion, waste time doing individual skill drills when I've got the team together? When I have the team together, I want to put them in the one-on-one, in the game-like thing, in the learning environmental cue-rich situation where now they can try to work on those skills and get instant feedback based on did it work or not, what do I need to tweak here, and then go away on your own in Canada if we have the weather where you're at, get to the outdoor rink, go public skate, find your own ice, do what it takes, get on the driveway with one of those round weighted balls that feel like a puck, like I don't care, to figure out a way. If you really want to get better, there's ways to get better. You don't need a sheet of ice with a team practice on it to do it. So I choose to use as much ice as I can, putting these situational games in so that the kids can gain that feedback. Because you can't gain feedback on your 1-on-0 in the driveway against an opponent, because there is no opponent. That's the time to get your skill stuff done.
How different do you think it is for a guy like Marty St. Louis, now coaching an NHL team? He's never coached above, 12 or 13-year-olds, formally anyway. How different do you think it is getting that message about concepts across to his guys from the average minor hockey coach or above average minor hockey coach getting it across to his kids?
Like, how different? Like, I would say, I don't know, like, I think it would be great to be a fly in the room and to talk to Marty or to actually be there and listen and see. But I mean, I don't follow the NHL, any team that much, but I'm generalizing here. If I'm a team that's struggling, I fire my coach, we suck, we're, I don't even know how many, like, I think I heard 8 wins maybe this year so far.
Correct.
You know, they've had lots of, you know, Price has been out, like there's been personnel things, they fired the coach, they fired the GM, they brought in new people. Now they bring Marty in with, like you said, a dearth of coaching experience. They're bringing him in strictly, I think, because of his personality and his pedigree. And he sold himself on those things to these guys that were making the decisions. You know, at this point, you know, the players are probably going, look, this guy's played in the league. And as Marty said in his press conference, I've been a fourth liner, a scratch sent down to the farm, third liner, second liner, first liner. I've won the cup. I've scored a little bit. He empathizes with everybody in that room, at least from a forward position, maybe not the goalies and the D, but I think he's like an everyman. He can relate to a lot of the situations that happen at that level. Mm-hmm. And he's very passionate from what I hear. I hear he's very driven. You know, as a small guy playing in a big man's league back in the era that he played with clutching and holding and grabbing and, you know, brutalities, you know, metered out to players of his ilk, he found a way. And it was like, screw you, I'm going to get it done. And it was a chip on his shoulder. And it's like, I'm going to prove you wrong. I hope that it turns out great for Marty. I really do. I think I hear he's a good person. I think these players are going to welcome a different look. And to get away from maybe this black and white system and pattern thing to let's play with a little more expression, let's play with a little more freedom. I think he's brought some fun back in. I think there's a lot of stuff around the culture of the team, Richard, that needs to be changed. There's this stereotypical perception of what are the Montreal Canadiens, what they've represented historically to where they are now. And not even to get into all that, but I just think there's a lack of fun at pro sport in general, unless you're winning all the time, and they're not. So hopefully he's a breath of fresh air. Now, the second part of your question, how does a minor hockey coach do that? I mean, I guess you could take the same approach of as Marty, just realize what's the age appropriateness of my kids, where are they at mentally, like are they capable of learning some of these concepts? Certainly you can play keep away at almost any age, conceptually, they'll figure that out. Identify your prime concepts that you think are relative to that age on offense and defense, and then figure out some playground games and ways to introduce it on and off the ice and have fun with it.
You know, when you look at minor hockey coaches, generally speaking, we've said so often on the show, and I know you and I think the same way, that we're locked into certain ways to coach. You have to have certain types of drills. You have certain types of ideas. I'm not sure how many of them have really sat down to think about the kinds of concepts they want to present and become the breath of fresh air that you just described St. Louis as perhaps being with Montreal. That remains to be seen over a long term, of course. But certainly for now, and during this honeymoon period of a couple of months, he's a breath of fresh air. He's been there, done that. The minor hockey coaches who maybe have been there, done that in junior hockey or minor pro hockey can't relate to the 10-year-olds. With, you know, the 10-year-olds don't know when you play. They never watched you play. Even the kids of the coaches never watched you play. You know, you weren't married at that time. You know, so they have no concept of what you were like as a player. They basically don't care. And I've used the expression the wow factor, where a former pro gets on the ice, an NHLer or national team member gets on the ice and wows everybody with, you know, your experiences and your skill and all that. But that erodes very quickly if that coach doesn't have a handle on what are the big ideas. We could also change the word concept to big ideas. What is the big idea I have for this group, offensively or defensively? And I'm going to let you guys experiment, or you girls experiment, with how we're going to make that come to fruition even a little bit. Have some fun out there. And that's, you know, you keep saying fun, learn, return, baby. And, you know, I was on the ice a couple weeks ago with a girls' team, 13, 14-year-olds who were struggling this year. It was the most fun I've had all season being on with that group.
Awesome.
I was just as goofy as hell out there with them. And, you know, the girls are ribbing each other and they're ribbing me and they're ribbing the other guy who was out there with me about, can you even lift the puck that high? You know, as I'm chipping it into the corner and, you know, that kind of nonsense. Like, let's have some fun with it. We're doing a one against one game. Yeah. Like, get out of your skin and just enjoy it. And the concept being fun is an integral part. And if we're going to do a one against one game or a puck handling exercise as a warm up, that's conceptual. That's an idea. Let's play with the idea. And as I said before, water it and make it grow. It won't grow into a full oak tree that year, but you're planting the seed, you know, you got to start somewhere.
Well, and it's like, we play hockey, we don't work hockey. And ultimately, yes. I think one of the things where I think if what I hear about Marty is true, he wants to get better. He's driven. He wants to relate to his players. And all the stuff that you and I have talked about today or in any podcast or anybody talks about.
Sure.
Like, you know, the old saying, they don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. If Marty can connect with his guys, and I know it's an NHL, I know it's pro, they're going to judge him on his win-loss record from here on in. But I'll tell you, if he can connect with those guys, Richard, and develop that, I think that you're going to start to see some sort of an outcome that's going to be positive, not just the process.
Well, they're pros, but I mean, you've been around pro hockey yourself. I haven't. Well, except, you know, in France, which was barely pro. But I hearken back to a series that I forgot was it Sportsnet or TSN did about the Leafs, like following them around the dressing room during the playoff run last year. Their playoff run was short. Of course, they only went 7 games against Montreal. I'm sure the series would have gone beyond 5 episodes had they gone further. Yeah. What struck me, and I've only been around a couple of teams like in the dressing room area a few times in my life, but what struck me was I was watching my 14-year-olds in AAA who were taller, could shave, and had a lot more money in the bank. They were just big kids wanting to play, getting the same kinds of messages from the coach. You know, we got to do this better, we got to do that better, little chit-chats and goofing around in the training room. The same thing as the guys in junior, same thing as the guys in minor hockey, basically, you know, with degrees of silliness. Like watching Jumbo Joe Thornton goof around with the players.
And there was, it's like being in kindergarten, it's just they're shaving.
Exactly. That's what I just said. Yeah. Well, he doesn't, but everybody else does. So the ideas are very much the same. It's a matter of execution and a matter of winning versus minor hockey, where it's less a matter of execution, but very much a matter of getting the kids to learn how to adapt or how to absorb these concepts and apply them and then take it from there and see what happens.
Yeah, I agree. It's all or nothing. Amazon Prime, Toronto Maple Leafs.
Was it Amazon Prime? Is that what it was?
Yes, it was.
Okay, Dino, thank you very much. That was Concept, What a Concept, with Dean Holden in Calgary. And you've been listening to Grassroots, the Minor Hockey Show. I'm Richard Berkeson. Dean, thanks again. We'll be back in touch for another show shortly. We wanted to tackle the famous Yogi Berra saying, and we'll get back to that another time. Would you agree?
All the time, buddy. We'll get back to it another time. If you come to a fork in the road, take it.
Take it. Nobody ever goes to that restaurant. It's always too crowded. All right. Take care, Dean.
Thanks.
Bye.